A Thought for Your Penny is hosted by Shauna and Squeaky and explores ways to save money and tips to avoid scams, all while they share their own stories along the way. Get in touch by calling 970-425-3060 or emailing penniespod@gmail.com.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm glad you could come in today. This is A Thought for Your Pennies, and we're going to go into the story segment here with my co-host, Squeaky.
Hey.
And so I'm going to talk today about toddlers. And I remember when I was raising my toddler, they were like, oh, there's the terrible twos. But I was like, the ones are awful. The twos are awful. The threes are awful. I mean, it's awful, but it's sweet at the same time. But the inability to name the emotions just make it toddler phase really difficult.
Was the common thread to you having toddlers being terrible? Seems like it was you and not the age.
Yeah. Well, my mom, whenever I ask her, what is the best age for kids? And I'm her oldest child. And she looks at me and she goes, how old are you? And I'm like, I'm 40, Mom. And she's like, okay, yeah, that's the best age. Like, whatever age I am in that moment, she's like, that is the best age. And, you know, it's one of those things that my mom does. It's like, it could be a moment of zen of like, oh, I accept you as you are. Or like, you know, a backhanded compliment that all the previous years were pretty bad compared to this year. It's a little bit better. You can't quite tell with my mom. I'm finally learning after 40 years of being with her. Anyway, so my toddlers, I mean, I love my kids and I don't like to complain about them, but I think it's really tough when you have kids under the age of 5. And my kids were 2.5 years apart. I had 2. And I just feel until the youngest one goes to kindergarten, you don't have a life. You are just a child person.
Full-time parenting. Okay.
Yeah, full-time. I mean, even if you have a full-time job, you are full-time parenting those children. I was thinking about when my kids were babies and then they first started to sit up and you could leave them alone. It's just like you finally get to reclaim some of your time after that first 6 months of they could not sit up. So you had to do everything. And it's just, there's just so many phases like that with a kid where they develop into something and you're like, oh, I get a small sliver of my life back. But so toddlers are great. They're really funny. So one of my toddlers loved to play and he was like maybe 2.5 years old at the time when he learned that the doorknobs in our house, like one side of it, the outside of it was, you know, a doorknob that had it was those golden or brass ones that had a hole in the middle of it. And then the other side would lock, you know, for inside a bedroom or the bathroom in particular.
Yeah. So the one side had the unlocking mechanism, the other side had the locking mechanism. Okay. Yeah.
And it had like a push button so you could push it and lock it. And then he started to do this thing where he would push the lock to lock it on the inside, but be on the outside of it and then close the door. So nobody could unlock it. You had to get a jewelry screwdriver or a paperclip and get in the hole that was in the front of the knob and poke it to pop out the lock on the other side.
With all the ones nowadays, they automatically, as the door closes, it unlocks it. That's devious. Okay. Good on him for coming up with new kinds of trouble.
I know, right? So yeah. He started locking all the doors. And so we started keeping little tools above the door frame that he could not reach to be able to pop the lock open. And he saw us do that. And then he, over a period of a couple of months, started to collect all of those little tools.
How? Did he do Spider-Man impressions or what?
So he would lock the door and then shut it. And then you would come up and try to open it and you couldn't open it. And then I would bring down the tool and pop it open. And he would go, can I see that? And I was like, yeah, sure. You can see it because, you know, toddlers are curious. And so he could pop it and unlock it, pop it, unlock it, pop it, unlock it. And so we thought, oh, this is good. This is science. I don't know.
He's exploring. Yeah.
Yeah. So he couldn't choke on these things that we were using to unlock it. He wasn't running around with it in his mouth. So we were like, okay, yeah, unsupervised. You can have the popper opener of the door handles. But what we didn't know is that he was collecting them and he was hiding them in his room until one morning. And the other thing about toddlers and babies and little kids before they hit puberty is that they're always up at like 5 a.m. or whatever ungodly time it is. And so he, one morning I got up and the bathroom door was locked, first bathroom. And there's two doors to this bathroom. So I tried one side, tried the other side, looked above the door frame of those ones, and there was no popper thing to open it. So I was like, okay, I got to go to the bathroom. So I run over to the other bathroom and that bathroom is also locked. And I'm tired. Both the bathrooms in the house are locked. Can't find any things to pop it open. So I get the toolbox out and take a Phillips screwdriver and go to the doorknob and take, you know, that flashing that's off of it.
Yeah.
And I am unscrewing the doorknob from the outside so that I can get in and go to the bathroom. And as I'm unscrewing it, all of a sudden my toddler comes up and is eye level with me. He's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I am opening the bathroom door because for some reason this morning they are all locked." And he's like, "I didn't know you could do that." And he like melts away.
He was trying to prank you?
Oh, man. I was worried the punchline was going to be, "And then my toddler told me all of the tools were under the sink in the bathroom," or
no,
something.
No, he didn't get that far. I mean, he took, and then we went into his room, found all the poppers that he had been collecting over the last month.
Fantastic.
And we're like, please don't do this to us again. That was not cool. But it was so, it was weird because the kid was not even 3 years old yet. And he planned ahead, you know, a plan that took many steps over a month or so of like, I'm going to collect all these things. I'm going to get up. I'm going to lock it. And just the bathrooms, I'm not locking the other stuff, but the bathrooms that I know they get into, they need, you know, it's just like, how much of that, I don't know, is it a higher intelligence or is it malevolent? Like, I couldn't quite figure it out. But that's kind of what you're thinking about toddlers is like, is this good for them or is it malevolent? You don't know yet.
I don't see that malevolence and higher intelligence are mutually exclusive. It feels like a little bit of both for this one thing.
Yeah.
So did you go on to teach your child to just be the expert at prank wars or did they grow out of it or what happened?
I mean, I feel like sometimes your kid, as a parent, you just kind of get collateral damage from things that they do to you. And sometimes they get collateral damage from you. Because one time he was on my shoulders as I was walking down the street in Old Town. And he was just like, "Ow!" And then a few feet later, "Ow, ow, ow!" And then I'm like, "What is going on? Ow, 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 ow!" And then I realized that I was walking underneath trees and the branches were hitting him in the face. But he wasn't telling me, "Hey, you know, stop it. Stop walking into the trees, Mom." He was just like, "Ow, ow, 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 ow." So that was an accident.
Well, you're not going to lock the bathrooms again, are you? Take this.
I mean, maybe that's after I whacked him in the face with the trees is when he hatched the bathroom plan. But
revenge.
Yeah. And there was another time with my toddler where he was like, I remember he was sitting in my lap, was sitting on the couch, and he was like, "Tickle mommy's ears." And I was like, okay. So, you know, he like reached up to my ears and he was like, "You know, I'm tickling you. I'm tickling your ears, mommy." And you're like, "That's so cute." So then I was like, "Tickle baby's ears." And then he was like, "Tickle mommy's chin." And I was like, "Okay, I'll tickle baby's chin." And then he was like, "Tickle mommy's throat." And so I showed my throat and then bam, throat punch.
Bam, throat punch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
wow.
This is what toddlers are. Like you.
Yeah, sometimes they're malevolent. Let me experiment with the environment. And that includes throat punches as an experiment.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, like, I don't know, emotional control or things like that, because they just can't. Like, so one time the toddler has an older sibling and we're in a cafe, and at the cafe, unfortunately, it only had one chocolate muffin left. And yeah. So, you know, we think like,
tension. Okay.
Yeah.
We've got some
right.
stakes.
Yeah. This is
yeah.
going to be a problem. But so since it was going to be a problem, I didn't want to have screaming kids in the store. I took the chocolate muffin, took it outside, and I split it to give half to one child, half to the other. Well, the toddler was like, "If you are splitting it, you are destroying it. you are destroying my thing. And I gave the half to the toddler, and he took it, threw it on the ground, stepped on it, and ran into traffic because he was not going to accept. And that's when I started to think, after this incident, because the driver saw him and screeched to a halt. So after this incident was when I was like, you know what? Toddler leashes are great. They're safe. They are. This is the best thing you can do for your kid, is to lash them to you, because you never know when they're going to accept half a chocolate muffin or they're going to step on it and run into traffic. Yeah, toddlers are amazing to raise. And you were a toddler once, and you probably did stuff like this.
Me and my brother did the exact opposite to our parents. We eventually realized, right? Because like, as a little kid, you're not a whole person yet. And when you're not a whole person, it's real easy to just be super malicious. I don't know, like one time, like, okay, my dad would make these biscuits, right? These things you just crack open the tube, you throw it on a cookie sheet, you throw it in the oven. Like 10 minutes later, you have, you know, something that is like a homemade biscuit you can serve to your family, but with the amount of time that, you know, a parent has, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know, hundreds of times he fed us this, you know, once or twice a week for our whole childhood. One time he pulls them out like 5 minutes early and they're not done. And for like the next 5 years, we'd ask every time he served it, are they done? Like, it stopped being funny the 10th time, and it got funny again around time 100. It got funny again around time, oh man.
Right, so it's like, it's the give and tug and pull of, well, I mean in normal relationships, right? Like, you can definitely have abusive relationships of parents being abusive to kids, which is, you know, how the power imbalance flows, but sometimes kids being abusive to parents, like... But normally it's a give and take where you make fun of your child or your parent for the 300th time. Yeah. And they maybe are doing that to you. I don't know. Hey there, Penny Thinkers. This is the ad part of our show that you want to skip over, but I don't want you to skip it because I want you to help out people who have survived the LA fires. And we have this link for you, linkcuts.org/LA fires. If you go there, there's a Google spreadsheet that has a ton of different organizations to help out the victims of the LA fire. Would love if you could show your support for our show by supporting the survivors.
I don't know what you said, Shauna, but I wholeheartedly agree that we should help people in the LA fires. So yeah, was that linkcuts.org/LA fires, all lowercase?
Yeah, that is the link, linkcuts.org/LA fires.
Well, I support you think I am fires prevent money donate.
Did I just word salad?
If you know, if you didn't, I got lost.
Man, the important thing is linkcuts.org/LA fires. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Thought for Your Pennies podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about ways to save when you're thinking about college. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hey, I'm Squeaky, and like a chump, I paid off my student loans.
Wow. That's a good milestone for you, Squeaky.
Biden was going to do it.
Yeah. Biden managed to pay $136 billion off of student debt for folks, especially for some people that had some of the worst loans out there, and strengthened up a lot of it for people to be able to pay off debt and to be able to borrow for college. But definitely a long way to go on that one.
I'm actually not salty at all. Like, I finished paying mine off like right when those programs are starting to roll out. And I'm like, you know what? All those people with worse loans, I'm glad they're getting it paid off. This is something I think that we should just be getting more of. If I had kids, I'd want them to go to college without being in debt for, I think I was paying on mine for 17 years. Holy smokes.
I was also not salty about Biden forgiving debt for people because a lot of it was for nurses, teachers, service loan forgiveness programs. For me, when I had been paying on my loans for 8 years and I was still underwater on them, like the principal amount had not gone down. Ooh. I was pretty upset about that and realized that I had not made some good financial decisions when I went to college. So I refinanced the majority of my debt into secured debt. So I think most people know that college loans are unsecured debt because they're not backed up by anything. But secured debt is usually when it's backed up against a particular asset like your house or your car. So secured debt, especially home debt, is a lot cheaper. So what I did is I refinanced my student loans into my house to be able to have a much better interest rate, and I was able to pay off the principal much quicker that way. And now I have about $30,000 still left of student loans, but it's federal loans, and those are subsidized, and I get a tax benefit on the interest for them. So nice. I keep those on. So think about some big concepts, you know, before, hopefully before, or if you have a family and you're thinking about how can I help my kids with college, plan as early as you can for best results. Some states have special savings programs that you can contribute to be able to save for your kids' college. In Colorado, they have a system where as long as you haven't graduated from high school, you can get community college credits for free. So for my kids, what I did was I sent them to community college to get kind of a lot of their prerequisites out of the way so that when they go on to get their bachelor's, if they want to, they only have to pay for 2 years to get their bachelor's.
Half off. One of those years can be crazy expensive. Here in Nebraska, we have another account. We have the Nest 529 account. It's tax privileged, so any money you put in there doesn't get taxed, but it can only be taken out by the kid when he's going to school or under some conditions if they choose not to go to school. So like they have to be like 25 or something. But like,
yeah,
it's tax-free money for your kid that earns interest that will go to their college. Yeah. If Nebraska has it, civilized states must.
Yeah. 529 savings accounts are pretty common for people to be able to save. But there's other strategies like I was talking about, you know, graduating early, living at home, getting some college courses done while they're still in high school, attending a state school. Those are some ways that you can think about big picture ways to be able to save on college.
We combine this with other saving strategies. Do you think you could like look it up on freebies, find free education or even just diplomas?
I think we'll have to talk about that in the college scams part because a lot of those can happen, are kind of scammy, can be kind of scammy.
Diploma bills are not good.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, thinking about college and savings, another thing to think about is making sure that you're going to the right type of school or that your kid is going to the right type of school, because sometimes you don't really even need to go to college. A boot camp or an intensive study might be the right thing for your job that you want to get into. And for some folks, that works and it does it for other people. But going to college is not the only way to be successful.
Yeah. And I guess if you go in clear-eyed and with the right information, if you educate yourself on education, you might be able to get good results.
Right.
But
yeah,
just like my friends with college degrees, they're putting in something like 100 job applications, getting back 2 responses.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts. When their response rates are like, you know, 1 in 500, it's rough. And it's just, it's why I always suggest college if you can't, because I honestly think this country is just structured such that if you don't go to college, you're just screwed. You just screwed.
So one thing that you could do to maximize being able to go to college is you could consider a school that is not on your list of colleges that you're applying to. And how you do that is there is a website called the Common App. It's www.commonapp.org.
Okay.
And this is supposed to help, you know, simplify the process of being able to apply to colleges, where you put in all of your information and you put the schools that you want to go to that accept the Common App. But then colleges can also start looking for you. So lots of colleges that you have probably never heard of will reach out to you through the Common App with a really great financial aid package to make college possible for you.
You know what I've never seen on LinkedIn? Every job says it needs a bachelor's degree. They never say you need a bachelor's degree from Harvard.
Yeah, I think reputable colleges, I think the education is one thing. And I think the other thing that colleges provide is connections.
Absolutely.
How deeply are they embedded in your field, in the international business community, in the medical community? I think that's one huge thing about being able to get jobs. You get a high amount of rejection rates from when you're applying blind.
Yeah.
But if you are networking out there, you know somebody who says, hey, you should apply for this. You know somebody who's worked there before, who can recommend you, who can refer you. That is a much higher success rate of being able to get jobs. And a lot of those connections you get while in college.
So many of them, you skip the concept of applications. My brother has been working on his doctorate in cognitive psych for like a million years. And he moved over into a statistics job for a different university. And because he knew people, they were like, we have a gap. You're doing all these statistics on these ridiculous amount of papers you're writing. And my brother writes brilliant scientific papers. And he just moved into this role doing statistics. And it was pure networking, right? He didn't even apply.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. When you're in college, the people you meet are more valuable than the paper you get. Ooh, that's quippy. Ooh. Can we do t-shirts? The paper you get. Wait.
No. The people you meet are more important than the paper you get. Right?
I like it. And it works. It works. It works for the job market and it works for zigzags. This is perfect.
There you go. We'll see how successful this pod is and then we'll talk about merch.
Let's do it.
All right. So let's talk about scholarships. There's lots and lots of scholarships that are tied to lots of different experiences and things. And sometimes it can seem like a lot of work, $500 there, $1,000 here, but it can really add up. And I think a key way for scholarships is getting involved in something that you like. If it's journalism, if it's marching band, something that you like as a student and excel in that thing, that will help you get a scholarship. A lot of times we think of sports scholarships, but really for schools, there's a lot of different scholarships. Like when I was in school, I got a scholarship to Champaign-Urbana for debate.
Awesome.
So, yeah, not a sports scholarship. So I didn't end up going to Champaign-Urbana. I went to the state school, but that's an example of things that can help you get scholarships in there.
So if you'd asked me, like if just a college kid had approached me and asked for my advice would have been just apply for as many as you can. And that just isn't what you're saying. You're saying focus in and get good stuff. And you got results. And I didn't. So clearly you're correct on this one. No. But like, how many scholarships are there in these different fields? Because I know like academia is big on like forensic debate. So I knew there was going to be scholarships, right? It was just what can an up and coming student have for expectations like that?
Well, I would just expect that anything that you can take in high school, there will be a scholarship for it in college.
Underwater basket weaving.
Right. If you get really into weightlifting in high school, there will be scholarships for it in college. Whatever you spend doing in high school.
Did you yes and me?
Yeah, sure. I am sure there's underwater basket weaving scholarships. Just for the joke value alone, there has to be. And again, one way that you can do this, the Common App, I'm bringing them up again, because not only have they streamlined being able to have one application to make the college application process, they've partnered with the College Board's Big Future Scholarship Search to streamline that application process to be able to get scholarships through just filling out a scholarship application one time, because that's a big barrier for folks for applying for scholarships for $500 here, $1,000 here, is that you have to write an essay for each one. You have to write a cover letter why you deserve it, where the competition is high. So trying to streamline that process can help you get some scholarships.
I wish I knew more about Common App. I do have a friend who used it to get into school, and they're in school now, and they keep asking me for advice. You know, I try to help them out with, you know, money and advice and stuff, but like, it's just changed so much since I went to school. Like, he told me about this Common App, and I'm like, is it a scam? And he's like, no, man, all my teachers pushed it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a legit thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Other things that are really important for financial aid is taking standardized tests, having a good ACT and SAT score. That hasn't changed since you went to college, Squeaky. Same for me.
They added a section. Now, I am old enough that when I took the SATs, there were the two big sections. There's a third section now.
Okay. But it's still important to have good scores on those tests and
absolutely,
taking prep
absolutely.
Classes. Khan Academy, I think, has free training for free education to be able to take to boost your ACT and SAT scores. So I think that's a good place to be able to go for free to be able to help yourself there. And then talking to your school guidance counselors for tips like free application days in your state is also a way to save money when applying for college.
That fits into the networking thing. There's always people coming to the school counselors with whatever their special thing is. And sometimes, you know, those weird outside vendors have good advice. Common App started that way, I presume. Yeah. So
I don't know how it started. I just know that used it for my kids. It was great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I think another way that you can save money is to take some courses while living at home during the summer to be able to save and accelerate on your classes.
Are the online classes cheaper then?
I think the taking classes while at home is just being able to save because you're going to like a local community college that you can transfer back into your...
I see what you mean. You didn't mean at home as in like on the internet. No. You meant... At home
during
as in
the summer.
Go to the local community college, transfer your credits.
Right. Yeah.
That advice is as old as time. Even back when I took the SAT and was building pyramids. That section was hard. We just invented triangles.
Good job. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Pythagoras.
He had some good ideas.
Yeah. So while you're at college, there's always broke college students things that you can do. Buying used textbooks is a way to save money, but beware of scams. Taking public transportation, cooking in the dorm, apply for paid internships. Gone are the days where you can really get a part-time job and put yourself through college or work a summer job, but it does help to be able to pay for some things. Apply for jobs like being a teacher's assistant or a resident hall advisor, just making it easier for you to be able to survive as a broke college student while
is ramen still super cheap? Because I can still make ramen in a coffee maker. So, I mean,
wow.
You get creative.
There's lots of things you learn at college, huh, Squeaky?
That was the most important thing, I think.
So we talked about preparing to go to college, what you could do to save in college, but then there's loan forgiveness after college. So according to NerdWallet, there are many common ways to get your loans forgiven. For example, as part of the American Rescue Plan, there is now an income-driven repayment plan, which makes payments where you make payments on a sliding scale, and you can get your loan forgiven after you've been making payments for 20 to 25 years.
Damn, I thought 17 was a long time and things have just gotten worse, haven't they?
Yeah.
Holy cow. It kicks in after 20 years?
25 years. So, but the thing about this, though, is that you are making the minimum payments possible. Because if you basically go to college and you just never make that much money with whatever field that you go into, like you can have it forgiven at that income level after 20 to 25 years. So that's really who it's designed for, is people who are just never making money.
Yeah, if you get like a master's degree in Egyptology, there's like one job you can do and you're going to be, you know, making burgers and you're going to be paying back that loan for 25. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then one that is more known about that's been around for a while is a public service loan forgiveness, which is if you work in the public or nonprofit sector, you can have your federal loans forgiven after making 120 qualifying payments. So basically in 10 years. The thing about this, though, is that this only applies to federal loans. So if you have a mix of private and federal, you could consolidate your loans to be federal loans in order to get all the debt forgiven on the public service loan forgiveness program.
Sometimes even just getting some of your debt forgiven can be a huge deal, though. So consider all the options.
Yeah. Some of the other things are like teachers can have some of their loans forgiven after being a teacher for 5 years. Nurses can have their loans forgiven. Most nurses have their loans forgiven through public service, but there is a competitive Nurse Corps loan program and a cancellation option for Perkins loans for nurses.
Okay,
and
then makes sense.
There are some ways to get your loans discharged. You can have your loan discharged if your school closed. There's also a borrower defense program. If your school was pretty shady or misleading, you can have your loans discharged because the school was not legit. Perkins loans can get canceled after 5 years of public service. You can also get your loans discharged if you become permanently and totally disabled. If you are a veteran and you get 100% disability rating from the VA, you can have your loans discharged then. And in the event of your death, your loans are discharged.
I mean, the death one sounds easier and more humane than the 100% disability on VA. I have a friend who's just recently succeeded at that, and he's only been working at it for like 10 or 15 years. He fell out of a helicopter, hit the ground at like 70 miles an hour, woke up 3 months later from a coma, and they didn't give him 100% disability until like very recent.
Yeah, that's one thing that they could do a better job about telling you in the military, that all the benefits that you're promised, you're going to have to fight for.
At least you practice fighting.
The other thing I was going to mention is that every state has a special program that for fields, for savings, for forgiveness. So contact your state's Department of Education to find out their programs for certain situations, for saving for your kids, for professions, to find out what your rights are. Make sure that you know what those are depending on where you live.
Now I wonder what Nebraska's are, because like they can't be good. Here's something off your loan. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you talked about the Nebraska's 529 program.
Yeah, we actually do really good with that. We're really good with giving money to people who have it.
Another thing that you can do is you can look for loan forgiveness or repayment as a benefit from your employer. Some employers have that as a recruitment retention tool to be able to keep you on. And some professions, like I know there's hospitals that really need nurses, so they will pay for you to go through nursing school as long as you work for them for as long as you were in school afterwards.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't remember that one. There's several places where I've contracted that offer that for full-time employees. It's probably why I didn't mention it. I never got a chance to use it, but I contracted like TD Ameritrade and Nationwide Insurance, and all these big companies have options for that.
Yeah. So that could be a way to pay off your debt. So that's our savings on college episode. If you have found better ways to save for college or things that we didn't consider, let's save money together. Send your ideas to athoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com.
And no fair saying to print the diploma. I tried that. They didn't take it.
Good job, Squeaky.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Thought for Your Pennies. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hey, I managed to save 2 pennies, and I'm going to donate them to the survivor of the LA fires.
The one survivor's getting both your pennies. That's so generous, Squeaky.
Oh, that's right. I'll find a few more pennies and donate to the survivors at linkcuts.org/LA fires.
Yep, helping each other out whenever there are problems is a great thing we should all be doing, even if we can't make it through a simple ad read without laughing.
All right, thanks for tuning back into A Thought for Your Pennies. We're going to be talking about higher ed scams. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hey, and my boss didn't pay me to explain the problem, just to fix it.
There you go, Squeaky. So here's some of the scams that we're going to be talking about with higher education. There are ones that unfortunately prey on you and going to college. One of them is the student financial service scam. So these are scams that pose as legitimate offers for scholarships, grants, and financial aid services.
So hang on. These are the poorest people seeking financial aid and we're scamming them? What? What?
I mean, scammers are not anything if not infinitely creative. Think about ways they could scam you.
I just wish they could express that with like finger paint or something. Oh.
Oh, you could do it with a jingle.
This close to spraying energy drink all over the microphone, Shauna. Can you wait to say the funny things to when I'm not taking a sip?
Sorry. Sorry, you could do it with a jingle. You know, I love, you know, the pizza bagel jingle. Scammers in the morning, scammers in the evening, scammers at supper time. When you're trying to scam people out of money, you can scam them anytime. There you go.
Now I'm hungry.
For scammer bagels?
Sure. I don't know. Pizza bagels of any kind. I guess a little bit of scammer probably isn't vegetarian, but if I'm eating a scammer, the world's a better place. So, wait, did we casually suggest cannibalism?
No, I was just thinking about how pizza bagels might be a scam because they look so good and they never did taste very good.
Nope. They're definitely better on the packaging than in the packaging.
Anyway, so for the student financial service scam, you get called, mailed, or emailed with a great offer, but then you're asked to provide personal information or pay up front for a fee in order to proceed. And they want you to pay by gift card or money wire. So yeah, you want a scholarship, send us a Visa gift card. That's probably a scam.
Yeah, if you're not paying through something that offers refunds, there's a huge chance it's a scam. And I bet they do the thing where they produce a false sense of urgency. Give us money or lose your student loans or something.
Yep.
Terrible.
Another type of scam is the unpaid tuition scam. So the scammer contacts a student and says, or your parents and says, hey, you haven't paid the entire part of your tuition bill and that needs to be made immediately. Otherwise, it'll affect your enrollment. And so if this happens, make sure you call the actual phone number and do not accept a text or an email or a phone call that says pay right now or we're kicking your kid out.
Yeah. That'll generate some false urgency. Pay or we'll kick you out of school. Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Your enrollment's in trouble. Yeah.
It'd be really weird to pay with like Apple iTunes gift cards though.
That's why I think it's a Visa gift card. So online income scam. So scammers will go to college students promising an online job so that you can make some quick, easy money. Company will ask for student money up front or send them a check for their work and ask them to send a portion back of the check to the company. Yeah.
Oh, and then they'll do something with, like, cancel some of the checks so their check never goes through, and then both amounts come out of your bank account. Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Gross. That's just straight up wire fraud, and it's super illegal, but it always is traced back to someone overseas, and just disgusting. Yep.
And they're going after college students because they need job, they need money, they're taking on a lot of debt, making
you
worried.
A real sense of urgency.
Yep, yeah.
And what sucks extra is there are real online jobs, right? Mm-hmm. There are things you can go online and like go do a thing where you're just processing information of some kind for somebody, you know, you can like, you know, like these AI companies, right? They're making their own data sets instead of just being plagiarism machines.
There's jobs where for like $20 an hour, you can go like describe what's in pictures and you just write little essays about each picture and you do that. It's monotonous and boring, but it pays.
So making sure that you don't fall for those scams, go to a reputable company, check the Better Business Bureau, do your homework, talk to people who have actually worked there or have actually done the work before, making sure you avoid that scam. Another scam is buying books online. Sometimes scam artists set up fake websites and offer great deals on super expensive textbooks only for the book to never be delivered. And so people get out of money as well as not having the textbook they ordered on time.
How have we had mail for like hundreds of years and we still just have straight up mail fraud? What?
Another scam is a roommate or rental scams. Scammers pose as an individual trying to sell or rent a property as a property management business, conducting transaction on behalf of a client. Potential renters are solicited for money and like an application fee, and they say that the homes will be shown to them or rented to them upon completion of payment. But then once the payment's received, they realize that there is no home for sale or the property is occupied. I actually had this happen when I was trying to help somebody find a place to be able to rent. And it was an address in my community and it said for rent on the outside of it. And the thing is that the property was for rent on a legit site somewhere else.
Like Zillow or something, yeah.
Yeah, but then they took the pictures and put it on Craigslist and said, we are the people renting this. And how we knew that it was a scam though is that it was $500 less than any other property out there. And so it was one of those too good to be true. It was not only $500 less, but then they were like, we need the first and last month's and the application fee all at once, and you can have this today. So we need like $7,000. So it's cheaper, but we want all this money now. And then you can rent it right now, like, you know, guaranteeing that as soon as you pay it. But it's like, wait, if there's an application, then how am I already guaranteed to have it if I just give you that much money? So it was off. We were able to spot it. But if you're a desperate college student trying to find a place to live off campus, you can get scammed.
Yeah. And it's not like you have that much money when you're doing this, right? Half the time that'll be like a gift from whatever. All your assets are the ramen and the coffee maker. You're not going to have money for that. Oh, man.
So to prevent these scams, here's some more tips. Make sure that you talk with your school before making payments on an unpaid bill or offering information on a loan, grant, or scholarship that is being offered. Financial aid forms, especially a FAFSA form, doesn't cost anything to fill out, and usually scholarship applications don't cost anything either. Research thoroughly any business before providing personal financial information or credit card information. Make sure that the website is an actual secure website, not a spoof site. Do your research. Talk to your friends and family and school officials to learn about how to protect yourself or loved ones from a scam. Never give your personal information to somebody who randomly contacts you. And if you believe that you're the victim of a scam, report it to your local police immediately. Contact your bank and credit card company and file a complaint with the Bureau of Consumer Protection.
That sounds really thorough, and I thought I'd have a joke by now, but I just don't. So I'm just still so saddened by, like, let's rip off all these college kids, and I'm like, but they're working so hard. They already have 3 jobs. Why?
We need protection, not to be ripped off. Scammers, leave the kids alone.
Can you try to scam me? If you need the money that bad, I'll just give you some. It'll be fine. We'll work it out. Like, sell me some new weird crypto or something. I don't know.
One scam that's not listed on here because it's more of a legal kind of scam is the credit card offers that go to college students. People who don't have a lot of financial literacy and get preyed upon. People who sign up for the military also get targeted for financial scams because they know that there's a lot of money that you get with sign-on bonuses in the military. People know that college students are trying to pay for a lot of things, and so we'll want to charge things on credit cards. So making sure that you and your kids have a good amount of financial literacy when entering the college world is important.
Yeah, if the crime is organized enough, it's not even illegal. These credit card places, there are so many ways to get burned on it. You just have to be careful because credit is a tool, and it's a tool that someone is hoping you misuse, so you owe them a lot of money.
But if you have other things to talk about with higher education scams and how to avoid them, let's save money together. Let's protect ourselves from scams together and email us at athoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com and we will share it with other people.
Nice.